The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Since I didn't listen in those conversations, I didn't partake of some of the wisdom that was passed on. And I wonder if a few of you might want to summarize very briefly some of the reasons why sensual desire can be quite compelling. It might be also interesting to hear what different groups said and came up with. Anybody like to do that a little bit?
It's not a consensus, but I think, isn't it that? It just reverberates so nicely. Which is that essential desire is part of a mechanism of survival. It tracks us, it makes sure we do the things we need to do.
It's a mechanism of survival. Okay, thank you. That chocolate I wanted at lunchtime. Yes?
Two things came up that I remember about why it's compelling. One is the belief that the satisfaction that it will bring is permanent. And the other is the belief that there's something not good enough about, or sort of boring or whatever, about this present moment. And so adding some spice will make everything okay.
Great, thank you. For a very talkative group, it's suddenly gotten very quiet.
We focused a lot on the survival thing, but we also talked about control. Sort of, it gives the illusion of control. And I might add also that there's an attitude of entitlement. You know, like I deserve to have this and I should have it.
Great, thank you.
We talked about there are needs that desire can be attempting to fill, but there are natural needs like breathing, eating, sleeping, and so on, which you don't need to apologize for. But there are others that may not be helpful or fulfilling. So it's a distinguishing between the two.
So is the desire to watch television an essential desire?
Sure.
It can be. Depends what you're watching, of course. the debates was not a sensual pleasure.
I think we touched on the addictive qualities of sensual desires and how, you know, okay, the first bite of chocolate cake is good, and the second bite wasn't quite good enough. I gotta have another. So it just builds on itself. It's the addiction.
Uh-huh. Great. Thank you. Right behind you.
I need to finish that thought. We also said if we ate chocolate cake mindfully that we would eliminate that.
There was another part about the illusion that perhaps the object of desire would create a change in me that would, or anyone else, that would, you know, solve my problems or whatever is going on with me at the moment.
Great, thank you. When I was, I suppose I was 28, I worked at the Tassajara Bakery, and when I felt kind of lousy, a little bit kind of down, I had all this access to this wonderful French baguettes. I'd bring them home with me, leftovers and all that. So if I feel a little bit down or whatever, I start eating baguettes. And then I feel worse. So then I eat more. And then I'd feel worse. And then I eat more to comfort myself. But I didn't make the connection with the bread and feeling bad. And what happened was that I had become allergic to wheat. And so it had a big impact on me. And I remember once walking around San Francisco, kind of not even knowing how to think, or, you know, I felt numb and thought, oh, they're going to have to institutionalize me. This is serious. And eventually I figured out that was, you know, I had this little allergy, and then I cleared it all up. But this idea of, you know, feeling lousy, wanting to comfort myself, and going for a particular food and just keep doing it, and then this, how vicious it was, you know, because it, the very thing that I was comforting myself with was the thing that was doing me under. Right back there.
In our group,
could you wait for a microphone? Other people do.
In our group, the issue of desire was talked on a physical level, of this kind of tightness in the throat and this feeling of reaching and, you know, kind of grabbing, a whole kind of constriction. And so that when the desire would come, if paying attention, you would see that there was a lot of discomfort attached to it.
Great. You're in the front, Kimberly? She has one. She has a mic. Just keep it there until...
We talked a little bit about how desire has some energy to it, and there's sort of a almost pleasant. I mean, if you examine it, it's unpleasant, but there's, yeah, a sense of energy or aliveness in leaning towards something.
So what's compelling is a sense of aliveness that comes. Mm-hmm. So the less alive a person feels, the more addictive it can be to feel alive from desire. So, you know, some of you know I talk about the caffeine of the soul. I said that the first two hindrances, desire and aversion, are the caffeine of the soul, because they energize people and they get them going and motivated. And that some people, when they stop being driven by desire and aversion, it's just like with caffeine. You stop the caffeine, there's a withdrawal period. And that's kind of hard for a while. But eventually, if you give enough time, then some natural vitality has a chance to surface. But it takes a while, and if you're not willing to deal with transition time, then you'll go back to wanting and hating.
We also talked about how seems to be a deep assumption that if we're not getting pleasant, comfortable feeling, that there's something wrong, that either with us or conditions, or that somehow it's a measure of whether life is going okay.
Yep. And we get a lot of messages from our society that,
yeah,
you know, they're supposed to be comfortable all the time or pleasant. So one of the things you talked about was disadvantages of, and I'd love, if we had more time, I'd love to hear some of the things that were talked about, the disadvantages. If you look at the handout, the one that says the weakeners of wisdom, one of three, the river analogy. I'll let you read the analogies at home, but if you look at the part in bold, and both of those. Just the one closest to you. Two, there's two there. Take both.
There's two here?
Yeah, take both. And it says, if practitioners have not rid themselves of these five hindrances, there is no possibility that they can know what is for their own benefit or the benefit of others or both. And I love that. It isn't just for your own sake that you overcome the hindrances. But when you're in the grip of the hindrances, it's hard to know what's really beneficial for you. You know, just one more drink. it's also hard to know what's beneficial for others or for a community, for everyone together. And I find over and over again in the suttas that the emphasis is not on self-benefit, not on benefiting others, but in benefiting everyone, mutual benefit. And here we have another example of that. So... So you see that, you know, many times when people are in the grip of, you see it in other people, I think. You see they're in the grip of desire or aversion, and we have to suffer the consequences. You know, it's painful for us somehow, or for the society. So that's part of the disadvantage, is what it does for other people. So one of my interests for you during this next month, as part of this program, is for you to become students, naturalists, of desire, in particular of desire for sensual pleasure. And just look for opportunities to study it. Look, you know, this is a good time for people watching. You can watch other people and see how you say, oh, look at that. That's how it operates in that person. But certainly look at yourself. And just kind of try to get as wide a sense of the terrain, of the territory, as you can, all the different ways it operates. It might operate, for example, how you lay yourself down to go to sleep at night. I remember it was many years ago when I was a new Zen student. The Zen teacher was so impressed by some man who said that he was an older man, and he said his whole life he had gone to sleep curled up in a kind of fetus position. And after some months of Zen practice, he finally straightened out. So, you know, we could comfort ourselves. And there's nothing wrong with comforting oneself, but it's important certainly to see the desire that's there and to begin to assess what motivates it, what drives it. Because there might be, even though it might seem innocent enough on the surface, it might represent some deeper roots, some deeper cravings, anxieties, fears, discomforts that are really better addressed by looking at them directly than by getting relief through comfort or sensual pleasure or something. So pointing you to how you go to sleep at night, maybe that's a simple thing, maybe you wouldn't even think about it, but there might be some very kind of subtle way in which even there you're kind of pursuing comfort and sensual pleasure, just how you lay down under your covers or something. So, you know, around food, even socializing with people. To what degree is socializing with people driven by a simple desire for the pleasure of contact with others? For some people, that's the case. Entertainment. To kind of spend time looking at it all, exploring it all. So I'm more interested in that at this point than I am in how you free yourself of it, how you overcome it. But overcoming it is also very important, and becoming free of it. And what I'd like to suggest, it's in the homework, in the exercises, is I would like, before kind of, I'd like to suggest that in addition to doing the study of sensual desire, how it operates in you, for you, you also become a student of contentment. And look for when you're content, and look and see how you can cultivate more contentment, and how you can find, be more content. And then look and see what the relationship is between contentment and your craving for sense pleasure. What's the connection? Now, you know, it's not meant to be a rhetorical question, because you can automatically think of a connection, but find out for yourself, what is that connection between the two? Does that make sense? Okay, so anything that anybody wants to say before we do a sitting? Anything, questions or comments about any of what we've done today? And please.
I just wanted to say that I think it was in the meditation when you said, what is it like to be in the grip of desire? I mean, that was just so visceral to me, because desire has that element of gripping or contraction, and it really does feel like a grip, and it was great.
I'm curious on the how a desire develops into a compulsion.
Yeah, how does a desire turn into compulsion?
Yeah.
You looking for the answer?
There's a process that I'm sure is understood by some.
Yeah. So I mean, the best place to get the answer is in yourself. So I would spend a month studying that.
I'm looking for pointers.
Anything else? Yes, please.
It occurred to me when I overheard somebody at the getting their tea, really enjoying the tea, that there's sensual desire and then there's just accepting sensual pleasure.
Yes,
they're two different things.
Two different things. Very important to distinguish sensual enjoyment from sensual pleasure from the desire for sensual pleasure. And there's no requirement to give up sensual pleasure unless you have a tendency to have sensual enjoyment and to translate that into addiction, into some addictive quality, some kind of desire, wanting more, wanting something. So it's one thing, you know, so you might, you know, I saw this bowl of chocolates there, so that's why I'm talking about it. You know, you could have, oh, maybe someone even hands it to you. Someone forces your mouth open and puts it in. And, oh, that's very nice. You know, it's enjoyable. It's enjoyable, nice, sweet flavor. And, but then, the rest of the afternoon, where can I get the chocolate? They ran out of chocolate. I'll just go to Safeway as soon as this is over. I'll get, you know, some more chocolate. And you see, and after, you know, and this might happen, you know, on different occasions. And after a while, you realize, you know, it's not so innocent for me to have the enjoyment of chocolate. The result, I've seen it over and over again, the result is that I spend the next 6 hours fanatically trying to find a way to get more. I think I should leave the chocolate down. So there is a difference between sensual enjoyment and sensual desire. But it doesn't mean that we can innocently just enjoy sensual enjoyments because there's no desire there. The way that in enjoying them, they might condition us or affect us in such a way that it might be wise not to go for those. And this is it relates to a Buddhist practice that's in the exercises called I call safeguarding oneself at the sense doors. Restraint in the traditional name is safeguarding as restraint at the sense doors. So you realize the effect that taking in sense experience has on you, and so then you you kind of restrain from looking at it or engaging in it or doing something so you don't have the deleterious effect. Okay, so upright, alert, comfortable posture. And gently close your eyes. And let yourself be at ease. And feel the rhythm of breathing in and out. And let yourself kind of feel or experience or receive that rhythm, breathing in and out in the body. And then can you see if you can evoke or find some feeling of contentment or attitude of contentment as you sit here? Is there some part of your body that you associate with the feeling of contentment? As you breathe, breathing in and breathing out, see if you can let the winds of breathing move through contentment, spreading contentment throughout your being, one breath at a time.
Thank you.
So, thank you for today. And another way of getting more value out of this year of study of the hindrances, and simultaneously another way of offering more value for someone else for the year, not just for your own sake, is to look for opportunities between our monthly classes, monthly day-long events, to have conversations with other people in the class about the hindrances, your discoveries, your exploration, your questions around it. So some of you know people here, so it might be relatively easy to get together for tea or for a walk, or call them on the phone and say, I'd like to have my monthly mid-month hindrance chat. Could I do that with you? Some of you don't know people here, so really you can easily ask that way. Or I'll say it this way. Some of you don't know people here well enough to think that you could easily ask them. I would encourage you, over the course of the year to, if you're new to all this, don't know people, to maybe be a little bit more assertive than you normally would be in life, and see if there's people here you could be willing to talk with you in between. During the month, on the phone or for tea or something. The other thing is that there's a world of difference between pleasure and happiness. Many people make that distinction, and some people confuse the two, and they think that they'll become happy if they can have more pleasure, and that's part of the reason why sensual desires can be quite compelling, because of that confusion. And to the degree to which this practice will lead you to want to give up certain sense pleasures or certain indulging in sense pleasures, you're not expected to do it because it's just good to give up and do without. Hopefully it's a very clear understanding that in giving up that indulging in compulsion or being in the grip of sense pursuits, that you're going to experience a greater happiness as a result. You replace the pursuit of sensual pleasure with the pursuit of real happiness. That's the hope from all this. So I hope that you'll have a happy month. If you're not happy enough, then I hope it makes you happy to have a practice and a study to do, some direction to go, because I think it's phenomenally meaningful for our society to have people look more deeply into the nature of desire, into the nature of sensual desire. So thank you for doing it, and I'll see you again in about a month.